Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside. Just outside of New York City from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York, Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney, the first pod of 2024. What's up, brother?
Oh, new year, new me. Ugh, God. Jesus Christ. It's New Year's Day, it was a Monday. What happened was the clock turned. You're not a new person. And you're not even gonna try. Okay? And this is for everyone. Oh, everyone. A mutual friend of ours who I won't mention, who I like a lot, Instagrammed, I can't wait to continue my growth from 2020. Oh, I can't even finish it. From 2023 in this new year. You're good.
Who do we know that would have done that?
Ugh.
Interesting. I'm not on Instagram. I don't know these things.
A lovely person. A person I really like, a sardonic-witted female, a great, like, she always fun. It's that whole sentiment, that whole thing. I can't. It infuriates me so much.
Well, I've known you for such a long time. I never knew this about you, that you hated the idea of people evaluating their lives at the new year.
I'm all for introspection, but the intro is the part of it, looking inward. What it means now is I've looked inward and now I must tell you how great I am for looking inward. Yeah. Now, I'm not accusing this person. And it was more the phrasology she used. But I like introspection and thoughtfulness and thinking about oneself. Surely part of that is not blasting it across social media to let everyone else know. Surely that's part of it.
You and I are of a similar mind on things like this. However, I would tell you that in a social media existence, this is part of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it just is. You have to understand that. And if it's nauseating to you, which I can see that, then you have to steer clear, especially this time of year.
Oh, so. I'm firmly a man yelling at a cloud here. And I am far too online. The last decade, I have been way too online. Now, I justify some of it for the show because I like picking up stuff and different opinions and different angles and like articles even. But I should know this. Like, you can be proud of yourself and just, you know, keep it to yourself.
This is JJ's way of telling everyone he's not happy with the man he is, and he doesn't want to hear about your successes.
No.
This is JJ. This is like a single person on Valentine's Day. That's JJ right now.
No, this is a perfect moment. And I get proud and I get smug and I get happy and self-satisfied. It's human nature to do such things. Mm-hmm. But yesterday I'm watching Liverpool Newcastle, which we will get to. I promise we will get to that. Mm-hmm. And I'm a bit late getting down there to the Munro, and it's packed, by you, absolutely packed with people who are, they're dying of hangovers, definitely from the night before New Year's Day game and the celebrations before that. But I'm standing in the doorway because I can't get into my usual spot, and it's fine. I can see the TVs. It's good. The door opens. Guy comes in, lovely fella. And and I just say to him, how's it going? And he points at me and he goes, oh, you're JJ from Caught Offside. And I'm like,
what?
Yeah, straight away. And anyway, long story short, lovely fellow. We chat for a little bit. But as he's about to go, he tells me the three things he loves about the podcast. And this simultaneously fills me with joy to hear that people enjoy the podcast and have thought about the podcast, and he, that he could even summon so quickly the three things he loves about it.
And he had a whole PowerPoint ready. He was
very articulate. Like, it was, he had this ready to go. And simultaneously, I love it. And I'm thankful and I'm grateful to have listeners like him. Jeremy, I'll give him a shout out. He's a neighbor of mine as well, as it turns out. And the other side to me, which is, I think the Irish side, I'm on fire. I literally want to self-immolate. I cannot process compliments about myself. I am unable to do so. And it's not about me not liking other people's successes. It's basically about me being uncomfortable with my own or happiness. Or I don't know how I turned out like this. I don't know. But so he's telling me these things, and one part of my brain is, hey, you did good, man. That's really, really good. It's amazing. Well done to you. And the other half of my brain is, God, oh, kill him. Ah, I can't. Oh, somebody quickly call me a piece of shit. Call me a piece of shit and tell me I'm scum. Tell me I'm scum right now.
In this instance, I can commiserate with a lot of that because I'm eerily similar to you. However, in this instance, I don't believe you. I think that you're the high that you were on from what he was saying to you overrode any other conflicting emotions.
I have friends. I can give you their numbers. Francie, my friend, was stood beside me. And Vanessa was stood in front of me, and straight after he left, after Jeremy left, they were like, they were just like, you can't handle that, can you? And I'm like, no.
See, I think you were walking around the bar like you were 10 feet tall after that. Before we get into the start of the pod and the previously mentioned Liverpool Newcastle match that you're talking about, just want to remind everybody to go vote. I got to retweet the link. But the like we mentioned a few days ago, we've been named as a finalist for the Sports Podcast Group's Best Football Podcast Award. And when you see the other pods nominated, Jesus, you will think, "Yeah, if I'm a fan of Caught Offside, I got to get my vote out there because it's some of the giants and then us." So if you are if you're a fan of this pod and you're proud of its kind of underdog grassroots nature, and you want to see how we can do against some of the less underdoggy podcasts out there. Yeah. Go vote, please. It's the Sports Podcast Group in the category of Best Football Podcast. I think voting is open until January 28th. So go vote. Tell your friends
to
vote.
Lots of time. Yep. Lots of time, guys.
Got about a month. So, yeah, get after it, everybody. Just another reminder, this Thursday, we're going to be doing a special New Year mailbag pod, 24 questions for the year 2024. So reach out to us through any form of social media, or I know the Reddit page already has a thread going where they've got a bunch of the animals are on it. They got a bunch of questions rolling in. So that'll be a fun one. We haven't done, I don't know. It's been a little bit since we've done like a full mailbag pod. Felt like the start of the new year was a good time to do it. So all your questions for the upcoming year in soccer, get them in there and we're going to answer. I guess we'll pick out 24 of them and we'll go with those. And then we're into January now, JJ. So the pre-sale of Caught Offside first edition t-shirts is over with. And now we are just in full-on sale mode.
Well, back up there. Yes, we will be. Oh. I have to make a couple of tweaks to the website, things that I noticed in our first sale that will make my life so much easier and everybody else's life. And I have to set up a few zones so we can sell to, so we can make sure our Canadian, Australian, Icelandic, Norwegian, all those people can get t-shirts. So I just have a few tweaks to make. So early next week.
Oh, what? What?
You can go absolutely nuts. Dude, listen.
Next week.
Listen. You calm yourself. I run this show. Okay. You can't go announcing anything when it comes to this. All right.
That's all fine and good, how was I not alerted?
Early next week is like Monday. You know, today is Tuesday. Now, even a few
people
days
were promised January.
Relax.
I apologize, everyone. Yeah,
relax. It'll still be January on Monday, friend. So, yeah, no, I'm excited to do that. And I am also very concerned about people who live in less. I mean, New York right now is kind of I wouldn't say balmy, but it's certainly a manageable
winter. It's freezing today.
It is cold today, but it isn't. Dude, have you been to St. Paul lately? Do you even care?
Yeah, just a week ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say the coldest I've ever been in my entire life was in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
In February of 2018. Right. So I stepped outside the Mall of America and my eyelids froze, essentially. Like the liquid that keeps your eyes like lubricated, it froze up. It was really unbelievable.
You went wrong.
It's the coldest I've ever been. And I spent 4 years in Syracuse.
Oh, I love the fact that you spent a day you couldn't close your eyes.
They're frozen open. It was amazing. I don't know how people live there.
Yeah, and you got to think of our Canadian cousins up there as well. Yeah. So, like, I really want to try and get some hats to them.
I would love one. Oh my god, I'm a big winter hat guy. I wear them inside sometimes. I'm one of those kind of D bags.
You are a D bag, all right. And by the way, before we get in,
come on, we're 10 minutes in, JJ.
Oh Jesus. Okay, it's the new year. I do want to address something that came up on the Reddit page. About me and certain
can
biases.
It wait till the start of the second half?
Yeah. No, it's going to wait till after the break. 100%. I just want to tease that I need to explain a few things because I've been cast as a coastal elite, Andrew, and you know I'm not that.
I think they've nailed it. I think they've absolutely nailed it. All right, let's get into the game that JJ stood at the doorway of the Monroe to watch, and that's Liverpool kicking off the new year with a pretty exciting 4-2 win over Newcastle that sends them 3 points clear atop the table to begin 2024. There's a lot to get to in this, but I think the overriding theme from this game, despite the scoreline, was utter dominance. I saw this posted from Opta Joe with an expected goals figure of 7.27 this evening. Liverpool recorded the highest XG total on record since 2010-2011 in a single Premier League game.
Yeah,
JJ, if you use... ready for this? This is unbelievable. If you use XG differential, so Liverpool's XG compared to Newcastle's XG, if you use that as a gauge for measuring how dominant one team was over the other, then listen to this from 538. They write only three games in 538's match database of over 36,000 matches were more one-sided than this one. The XG differential was 6.68 in Liverpool's favor, so plus 6.68 for them. Here are the only three that were higher than that. Okay. Barcelona's 4-0 win over Deportivo La Coruña in 2017. Manchester City's 8-0 win over Watford back in 2019, and Ajax's 13-0 win over VVV Venlo in 2020. And then this one for Liverpool over Newcastle. The scoreline doesn't do it justice. Props to Newcastle for being utterly dominated, but still being in that game somehow near the end until the final penalty. This was, I mean, if you're Klopp, I know they only won by two and they conceded a couple, but you know, for whatever shakiness there had been, you're top of the table and you just put in a performance that yielded a 7.27 XG. You got to be flying right now.
Yes. Yes, you do. But if you talk to me when I saw Isak's brilliant finish, mm-hmm. absolutely brilliant finish to make it 1-1. And you told me, well, at the end of the game, these records will be set and the game will be seen in the context of utter dominance. I would say I'll take the dominance. But the records, I wouldn't have felt that way. I felt like utterly deflated when that went in. And I worried, oh God, this is going to peter out into a 1-1 draw where we're just slinging balls into the box. We're pummeling them, but we don't get what we need to get the 3 points. Yeah, it was, I was listening to the Anfield Wrap this morning. And I watched Neil Atkinson on the post-match pint. And he was shouting. He did a great rant. It is very, very good, even if I don't feel it. But he was going about a statement performance. I don't think that was a statement performance, even though Liverpool did what they did.
Why not?
I think the fact that the game was in the balance for as long as it was. And the fact that Liverpool were, by the metrics we're seeing, prolific, it worries me. And it worries me also that the main character in this story, the creative fulcrum and the scoring fulcrum, will now be gone away for a month. That all that together means I come out of this thinking, yes, the league is right there for us. Mm-hmm. You can't feel any other way. But also, oh, God, there's a chance that things could slip in a month. And then, why does he persist with Darwin Nunez when the fluidity of Jota, Lucho, and Salah, and even, you know, Gakpo's introduction, there's more there than there is when he starts Nunez? These are all the thoughts in my brain right now.
Okay, let's pull on the Salah thread, because I actually do think that's a huge deal here. So he scores his 150th and 151st Premier League goals in this game. Incredible achievement. Should have had 152. Should have had a hat-trick in this one. He missed a penalty in the first half that would have put Liverpool ahead.
And can I give Martin Dubravka credit for just whatever inkling or feeling he had, just stay up. He's going to blast it down the middle, just stay up. And he did, and he saved it. Because he could look like a fool if he rolls it left or right of him. But he doesn't. And fair play to Dubravka for that.
Yeah, and maybe Liverpool still should have scored. I mean, Trent had the ball come to him with no defender really around. I know he's got to measure that one, hit it right, and he just doesn't.
Yeah, the bounce was a little bit high. He slices it, but yeah.
But so the point remains, though, Salah was... I mean, he was his Mo Salah best in this game, even with a missed penalty. Scored two goals, had an assist, had a hockey assist for the other one as he kind of started the move that led to, was it Gakpo's goal? I'm trying to remember. Yeah.
Yeah. So Dave Ticknor on Football 365, all the goals were either finished or created by Salah. Found himself down the middle to score the first, set Jota clear to square for Curtis Jones to score the second, assisted the third. The outside of the boot pass for Gakpo was like, what's the best piece of art you can think of?
This is the wrong pod for that. We have some well-documented failures.
Imagine Michelangelo's David, right? Imagine that. Everything's perfect. And the last thing he does is he gives Michelangelo's David a beer belly, a gut. That's what this goal was. Because it was so perfect. That cross was so beautiful. And Gakpo's finish was like, wah, wah. It just falls apart.
The aesthetics of it are not. Didn't live up to the assist.
No, they didn't. But
the point remains, Salah was ridiculous in this game. And he's everything. I mean, he's so important to them. And now he's gone. It's not entirely clear. Could be the full month. I guess we'll see as he goes off to the Africa Cup of Nations. He's got 14 goals, 8 assists this season. And so now, you know, it's a part of the field where you feel like, okay, in theory, with the resources that they've spent, Nunez, Diaz, Jota, Gakpo, you know, in theory, they should be okay here. But do you feel that way? Because I don't know that you should.
I don't feel that way. What I will say this, they're a better team when Diaz plays. They're a better team when Jota plays. Those are guys who are quick, nimble. They're slick. They can beat someone, and that opens things up. And Nunez, for all his attributes, and he has so many, his pace, he's his ability often to flick things around the corner, like he can give you something. And I'm going to retire the whole age into chaos thing, but he gives defenses problems. He definitely does. But he is just so not. I have no faith when he's one-on-one. I don't. I have no faith when there's a big chance. That's a problem. And again, it goes back to how I've been conditioned. I've been conditioned by a front three that was the epitome of slick, the epitome of efficient. And now we've got this new thing that's molding together, and it's not quite there. But what is quite there is the remaining part of the last great Liverpool attack. And now he's going away for a month. Mm. So, of course, I have this sense of trepidation that this thing will slip away, because it's right there. Now, there's other teams that can feel exactly the same way with how tight the top of that league is. Definitely. But you would say Liverpool are in the best position of everyone outside of Manchester City to take advantage of what's happening right now and win the league. And away goes the key component of their strike force. So that's why I'm not where Neil Atkinson is. That's where I'm not where a lot of Liverpool fans are this morning. And maybe it's just me worried. It's just total worry that, that a supporter has. You're either, there's two types of football supporter. There's the one who's guy who's always worried, or the guy who is just relentlessly optimistic to a fault. And I guess I fall in the former category.
Yeah. I will say one thing on Darwin Núñez's behalf as I was watching this. You know, sometimes one of the problems we have with him is like there's an erraticness to his finishing where it doesn't feel very reliable. And because of the position he plays, I sometimes feel like he feels this pressure where when he's around goal, he's just got to go for it. I felt like I saw something a little bit different from him in this game, a little bit more playmaker as opposed to just like, I'm near goal, I've got to fire one on. You know, the assist that he had for one the one goal, I feel like past versions of Darwin Núñez, even from that angle, would have just tried to go himself on that. And even in the first half in the disallowed goal, he's kind of central to goal. And I know he's got a defender on him, but again, it's a shot that I feel like I've seen him take and fully expected him to take. And in this one, he instead decides to smartly lay it off to Luis Diaz, who scored. Now it all got brought back because Núñez was marginally offside. But just the decision-making to not always feel like, okay, I'm a striker and I'm near goal and I cost this amount, so I've got to score goals at all costs. Like, I feel like maybe there's a little bit of a mentality shift, which I would feel good about.
And I think I'm super critical of him. I'm hypercritical, and I'm probably being unfair a lot of the time. But I'm just so wound up that...
You've planted your flag. And it's not to say that you can't change it as what you see in front of you changes, but you have firmly planted a flag in the I'm skeptical of this guy camp.
Well, like I see a player that running in on goal. I mean, the save he forced from Dubravka is it's a volley because the ball's hopping up. I'm more comfortable with him racing through on goal and the ball bouncing and he's going to smash it. Then when it's on the ground in front of him and he's 1v1 versus the goalkeeper, I'm sure I have seen a player like him before, but I can't quite remember or can't recall someone with his qualities, his various qualities. And I kind of feel like an impact substitute role is probably his best. But again, we're looking at Jota, who's come back from a serious injury. We're looking at Diaz, who's had his own injury woes, and you're trying to rotate that and keep it fresh. And that becomes very hard. Núñez now will prove his value over the next month.
Because
he's going to play more often than not, centrally, or, you know, with Jota and Diaz. It's a huge month for him and his Liverpool career. Absolutely massive.
We should say, while we're talking about this, we should mention what the fixtures are that Liverpool have. If you're big into Liverpool securing a trophy this year of some sort or double or whatever, then it's an important month. If you're singularly focused on the league or the Champions League, then maybe you're okay here. They've got an FA Cup match, third round match against Arsenal. What a way to introduce both of those clubs to the FA Cup this season. That's this Sunday. Then a midweek Carabao Cup first leg fixture against Fulham. Then on Sunday, they have Bournemouth. I believe is there an international break in between there? I can't remember now. So Arsenal in the FA Cup, Fulham in Carabao Cup, Bournemouth in the league, then the second leg against Fulham in the Carabao Cup, and then they close out the month against Chelsea in the Premier League. And we'll see when Salah returns based on how far Egypt go. So is that like a devastating month of action that he's going to be missing? Like, if they had Arsenal in the league and City in the league, I would say, oh boy, this is just the worst possible time for him to be missing action. Can they get by in the Carabao Cup two legs against Fulham without him? I think so. They should be able to still advance to the final. Are they going to crash out early in the FA Cup? Well, that could be a tricky one, having to face Arsenal in that stage without Salah. So we'll see. I think that they can weather this. I think there's enough there.
I think Bournemouth away is a massive game. Absolutely massive game. And a tricky one too. Yeah. Again, I'm probably... Opportunity is knocking right now for Liverpool, I think. And you're hoping Salah comes back without an injury or without fatigue.
We have to assume that.
And we've seen him come back from AFCON before, not in the best shape.
It's true.
So...
Yeah.
Just two, a variable I didn't want thrown into the mix.
And a variable, by the way, that a lot of teams are dealing with. It's just he happens to be, sure, coming off a superstar performance, and we know what he means to that club. One other note on this one, the fourth goal, the penalty.
Yeah.
Jota going down there. So Rafa Honigstein tweeted this. He says, Dubravka catches Jota's ankle. Dubravka admits to catching Jota's ankle. Only Jota knows whether he was genuinely unbalanced or somehow, why, happier to go down in front of an empty net. But either way, it's, in all caps, not a dive. And VAR was 100% right to not intervene. The end.
Correct. Absolutely correct. No problem with it. By the way, what Dubravka said was, my arms are not trying to catch him. I don't have to agree, but at the end of the day, it was a penalty. Where he's basically saying, I wasn't trying to catch him, but I did catch him. And it's a penalty. And I think Jota does go over. First of all, there's no amount of slow motion. Because I think this is another tweet from Rafa. There's no amount of slow motion that can really help you in this. He's moving at 30 miles an hour. He's absolutely sprinting. So you
30 miles an hour? Who is he? Usain Bolt?
He's
Come
flying.
On.
Absolutely flying. Yeah. And he goes over. I think he's probably felt that he may have overran it a tiny bit, and it's not a complete fait accompli that he's going to slide that home. So he goes over, but
that's it.
So what's the problem though?
Well, that's it though.
But has he been fouled? Yeah, he has.
So the more I watch it, the more annoyed I get by it.
Oh my God. Are you serious?
The more I watch it, the more I roll my eyes at it. Because you're right. He does everything right, but it's this idea of, like, he takes another full step, almost two steps after it happens. And then he chooses to slide. I don't know why. Maybe there's just some synapse in these guys' brains where they're so single-minded on drawing penalties that even with an empty net behind him, he thinks our chances of scoring are better from the spot than me trying to slot this one home. I don't know. But the more I watch it, I just thought, are you serious? Stay on your feet and score the goal. Now, he didn't do anything wrong. I'm not mad at him necessarily because a lot of guys would have done the same thing. But I don't know. There's just watches over and over again. I'm just thinking, stay on your damn feet. Like, you didn't need to go down there. If this happened in another part of the pitch, you stay on your feet and you keep dribbling. Like,
of course.
He knows what the reward is. The reward is so great that he's going down there. He didn't need to, but he chose to, and he was rewarded.
I think he's fouled, but he also knows that that ball has gone that little bit too far, and it's not going to be that easy of a finish.
So he chose to slide.
Right, but I think it was...
But that's the point, though. He chose to do it. He wasn't forced to.
Well, hang on. I think it's a few years ago. But hang on. He stays standing, right? He doesn't get to the ball. The referee shouldn't bring it back for a penalty then.
No, but this is why.
No.
That's why I'm not mad at him. It's why I'm just generally annoyed by it.
Right.
It just comes down to the fact that he had an empty net and he chose to slide because he wasn't totally sure that he could score.
I think it was West Ham at Arsenal. I want to say 15-16, but I can't be sure. It's so far back, but it sticks out in my mind. Matt Jarvis is running in on across the goal in the penalty box, and he's fouled, like clearly hacked, and he stumbles, but he elects to stay on his feet, and the referee doesn't give him the penalty. And I remember the podcast clearly. Both of us are, you got to go down. What are you doing?
What are you doing? I'm not mad at him. If it's your guy, if that's Son, I probably would want him to go down because I want the penalty. It's just something about seeing an empty net and a guy taking a full step and then sliding. I'm just like, oh, it's just an eye roll moment.
Yeah.
I get why they do it. The reward is so great. I get it. But like empty net. I can't
think of a scenario in which if that happened to the from an opposition standpoint, like some a non-Liverpool player where I would be up in arms about this thing the way some people are. I don't get it. I don't get it. And especially the pumping, the absolute pumping that Newcastle took in this game. To be arguing over these things,
that's irrelevant though. That has nothing to do with it.
It's so petty. Eddie Howe contradicting Dubravka as well. I don't agree with Martin there. Oh, don't you? Jesus Christ. Were you the one diving at his feet? It's so tedious. That game was a lot of fun.
30 miles an hour.
Rafa tweeted that, not me. Maybe
30 miles an hour.
Oh, he wouldn't have said miles an hour. He would have said kilometers. And I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I have to look the conversion rate there, because 30 miles an hour would be like, hey, I'm driving down a street here. Oh, and there's a man passing me. He's run by me.
Well, 30 miles an hour would get you done in a school zone, wouldn't it?
If he ran through a school zone, he could be pulled over. We're going double the speed limit.
Rafa tweeted, for the contact was minimal crowd. Try having your foot touched minimally while running past someone at 30 miles per hour. All right. And then he goes, meant kilometers per hour. Apologies.
All right.
He got jumped on. All right. Okay. There's other things to talk about.
What do we make of this new trend of managers? Maybe it's not a new trend, but I saw De Zerbi doing the same thing for Brighton. This refusal to watch my player take a penalty.
I
think Klopp. I have a lot of thoughts on Klopp.
I bet you do. You really hate that guy.
I've had it with him. It's unfortunate because he's so great, and I could see how a Liverpool fan would just like bow at the altar of Klopp. But like, it's just too many things. He's just been around too long, and because of my association with you, I've just been overexposed to Liverpool and Klopp and the culture and all that. And like, it's unfortunate because I can't enjoy him anymore. He's now crossed that. You know how sometimes, JJ, there's a person in your life where like they don't really do anything wrong, but every single thing they do now just annoys you. You can't get away from it. That's where I'm at with him. Everything I see him when they pan to him and he's smiling after like a call or something, like, oh, that smug smile. Like, there's no face he can make that won't bother me. That's just where I'm at with him.
Yeah,
he's too bad. I should be able to appreciate him. He's a legend, but I can't. I can't.
He's literally, in terms of his charisma, personality, and his smile, he's Fonzie jumping the shark. That's what's happened here for you. It's gone too far now.
He's crossed the threshold. We can never be friends.
I read this on the rundown. I have zero thoughts on it because I just don't have an opinion on it.
By the way, I was kind of annoyed by De Zerbi too. This was even before I saw Klopp doing it.
And
you
love De Zerbi. Oh my God. What did you proclaim him?
Do I? No.
Premier League's new house, wasn't it?
The next big personality. I don't know that necessarily means I'm going to love him.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
After he. Yeah.
No, I am. So one of my formative games, one of the first games I remember ever watching and being genuinely nervous, was Ireland versus Romania in the World Cup quarterfinal in penalties. And Jack Charlton didn't watch the penalties. He looked the other way.
Let me ask you a question. So this is going back a ways, but in the 93 World Series, the Phillies and the Blue Jays, Curt Schilling was pitching for the Phillies. And I remember him being roundly criticized because in the ninth inning, Mitch Williams was the Phillies closer and he was not reliable. He was called Wild Thing for a reason. And Curt Schilling couldn't watch. And so he had a towel over his head and he was ripped for it. Have some faith in your, you know, even if you're worried, have some faith in your teammate. How is this different?
It's a good question. I guess
when De Zerbi and Klopp are doing it, I feel like it's cute. It's funny. Everyone is loving it that they're doing it. This is so fun. They're just like, but I remember Schilling getting ripped for doing that because it was showing like you didn't believe in your teammate. By the way, he was proven right when Mitch Williams gave up a World Series ending home run.
But I guess I would say that the difference is pitching, I think. Oh God, is pitching less of a lottery than taking a penalty? I feel like it is.
Yeah, I think pitching is more. Yeah, it's more of a skill, I think, than the lottery of a penalty shootout.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, maybe that's why it's different.
Okay.
By the way, that's fair.
By the way, that's a genuine question. I'm not saying one answer or another. I'm genuinely asking.
By the way, Curt Schilling then made his name in baseball as the guy that coined the phrase "Why not us?" He was the one that did that, right? Remember
with the Red Sox?
Well, yeah, with the comeback. Have you watched?
Yeah, yeah.
The ALCS
in 2004.
Yeah, he was the one that said when they were 3-0 down, and he was the one that started saying, "Why not us? Why can't it be us to make the comeback?"
Was that him or was that Kevin Millar? Well, either way, Schilling was central to it. So
maybe
he might be right.
I mean,
anyway,
I mean, we've all wanted to put a towel over our heads in the in the intervening years watching Curt Schilling's career. I mean. As he's turned into like far right fascist agitator. I mean, that's
a lot going on there.
Yeah, a lot going on there.
Yeah. All right. No, fair enough. I don't have any more on this one, JJ. I'm ready to move on.
Yeah, let's move on.
And
let's take the towel off and move somewhere else.
Yeah, let's move on to one of the clubs that are chasing Liverpool, and it's not going well right now. Mikel Arteta calling Arsenal's 2-1 defeat to Fulham their worst performance of the season.
I mean, they were garbage.
It raises a lot of questions.
Huge amount of questions. Someone pointed out to me, they're doing what they did last spring much, much earlier now. That's what it feels like. So they go 1-0 up. Nice goal on the break. Again, Saka's finish it. Well, you can say what you wanted. Bounced into the net, whatever. Mm-hmm. But then, was it West Ham when they drew last spring, where they, for the first 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, they were like, you couldn't get near them. They were brilliant. And then they stopped. They stopped playing after they scored this goal. Fulham looked class. Fulham looked, if you were to take an alien from outer space, obviously, and you were to say, you know, which team here is pushing for a championship, you'd probably say, ooh, that team in white.
I genuinely enjoy watching Fulham. They're not going to win every game. They're going to get pasted in a few of these, and well, that's happened.
Was,
but
how good was that equalizer? It was super goal.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. And him and I think Raul Jimenez, I guess the greatest compliment that I could pay to him is that he made that look a lot easier than I think what that actually is.
Yes, because that was it. Robinson with the assist. Oh no, that was a previous chance, but it popped up. So you can, as we've seen, you can make a fool of yourself.
And there's an Arsenal defender sliding in front of it, so he's got to try to in the moment judge whether or not that ball is going to get nicked. He stays. You can watch his face on the replay. He stays so focused on the ball, and he hits it exactly right. It was a really nice one. And then look, the go-ahead goal from De Cordova Reed, bit of a lucky bounce. That stuff happens. He was there to pounce on it. Gabriel's clearance kind of went all wrong, and Fulham pounced. And so those are the opportunities you have to take advantage of that Arsenal aren't right now. I don't know. I have this weird thing with Arsenal where I'm not, because I do. From a neutral perspective,
you genuinely like this team.
I like watching them play. Like I do think, again, this is all my Tottenham fans that want to kill me right now for saying that. I have to be neutral on this podcast. I just have to. It's not a Tottenham show. So from that perspective, I enjoy watching Arsenal play. I do think that the build-up play is all there. Even Arteta in this one saying that it was their worst performance of the season. I get why he might be feeling that way, but going back and kind of rewatching the highlights again, there are chances. Like they still are generating opportunities. I don't know. This is going to sound so dumbed down, but I really like what I said the other day. I feel that way even more today. Where like if you replaced Arsenal striker, I guess Gabriel Jesus, with any of the strikers from around them in the league, Watkins, Holland, Son, take Isak. Your pick, Salah. I don't know. Maybe Isak. Maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. Isak. Maybe.
Ivan Toney.
I think it would honestly,
Ivan Toney in January.
Maybe even Solanke. It might solve their problems. Like I think everything is there. So I saw this from Aaron Lerner. He's got a at the Short Fuse, which is an Arsenal blog, and it's really good. And he writes in it, while playing the first, third, sixth, and eighth teams in the table in December, Arsenal's attack is trending in the right direction in every category that isn't actual goals scored. In the past month, the Gunners have managed four of their six best non-penalty expected goals performances of the season. They're up to seventh in the Premier League in overall non-penalty XG and second in the Premier League in open play chances created from passes. Like, they're still, it paints this picture that in attack, they're doing everything right except the most important part, which is finishing and scoring goals. And so I like in this game, you know, Arteta said the right things afterwards, but let's call it what it is. They sat Gabriel Jesus and replaced him with Eddie Nketiah. Now, Arteta said afterwards that this is just a rest thing. They only played it was only 3 days and they needed to rotate. But are you going to tell me right now with the way things are going and Arsenal's lack of finishing that if Nketiah didn't have a big game, if he didn't score a goal, two goals, that they wouldn't go back to him again? They're looking for options right now. And so I really think that if in January they do some piece of business where they do bring in an Ivan Toney or Dominic Solanke, I don't know if those guys I don't know if that's like enough to fix all the problems if they're quite at that level, but I do think it's an improvement. And I really think like Arsenal defending, they're still really, I think only Liverpool have conceded fewer goals this season. I think everything is generally okay, except the most important part, which is scoring. And if that's just a single person that fixes that, I think they could still be really good.
I don't feel that way. I know you're reading out stats. I don't feel that way about the performance. I genuinely thought it was like just really, really tired looking. I thought they didn't move the ball quickly. And then I read Arsblog's match report, and he says, if I want to see men using their sport ball very, very slowly, I will go and become a fan of lawn bowls. Touch, touch, slow pass, touch, touch, slow pass. See an opportunity for a quick pass, ignore it. Touch, touch, slow pass, slow pass. See an opportunity for a quick pass, ignore it. It's like some kind of malaise. I genuinely think watching them now, they look jaded. Somehow this team is jaded. Now, I don't disagree with you that having a forward, a dynamic forward, could revitalize this, re-energize this. But they were so far off it against Fulham. They reminded me of an Arsenal defeat that would have happened in early Arteta or the end of the Wenger era. That's what it looked like. You know, let's keep the ball. Let's be good in possession. Odegaard is trending back into form, but I think they were, in terms of like carving teams open, they look like they rely on him far too much. Saka looks tired. Saka looks really, really tired. It was right at the end of the game when they were searching for the equalizer, and Saka is kind of down the right, comes back and puts a cross in. You know, one of those where you're trying to put it between the last defender and the goalkeeper. And it was so weak and lacked any kind of, you know, zip or vim. And Leno just falls on it easily. They if this season isn't to slip away from them, they have to act in January. And
it might even be too late.
It might be too late. Although it's just goddamn tight up there.
Yeah, it is. I take that back. It's not. With Salah going away for a month, yeah, who knows? Who knows? No one is that perfect this season. We've said that repeatedly. But I don't know. So, you know, they had 30 shots against West Ham. That stat, 77 touches in the box without scoring. No one does that. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, but like, yeah, but you look,
there's
you
still
look back
there's still a lot right there.
Ah, you look back at that West Ham game though, Andrew. Like a lot of them, they did not trouble. Who was in goal for West Ham? Was it Fabianski? Whoever it was. I just don't feel like there was, oh my God, look at the slew of chances there. They seem much more, it seems much harder for them to create chances. And again, going back to what Arsblog said, if you're moving the ball that slowly, if your speed of play is that kind of turgid, then it's going to be like that.
So now stats don't matter to you. That's not, no, so when you want to tell me that Eddie Nketiah is the worst thing you've ever seen, you've got an encyclopedia of statistics. But when I'm telling you that their non-penalty XG is as good as it's been in a long time, it's, oh, you and your stats.
I never said, oh, you and your stats. I said they don't matter. I said about what I've seen or what it feels like to watch. Now, you could say, facts don't care about your feelings. And that's fine, too. Let's just say, watching them, it's very, and watching them, if you watching an hour and a half of Arsenal and then Andrew coming up and telling you about these excellent stats, there is a serious what would you ash between and I'm not invalidating your stats at all. In fact, I'm glad you've embraced stats finally.
What? That's a ridiculous statement.
I did a switcheroo on you. Can you imagine me from 2015? The way our 2014 when
you wouldn't even acknowledge XG was something you wouldn't had no use for.
No use for it. None whatsoever.
And then when Eddie Nketiah struggles, here comes JJ with the Torah, a scroll that he lays down in front of him.
Ken Early did it and I read it and I regurgitated it.
So well, I did the same thing with Aaron Lerner. So there you go.
That's a different thing. By the way, you could say since 2016, everyone's been able to enjoy my growth as a person.
Oh. Let's see. A couple other things. from over the weekend in the Premier League I wanted to mention. So Villa pull off a dramatic win over Burnley to keep pace. Wolves smash Everton. Bournemouth lose to Spurs, but actually still look pretty good. So I mention all of those teams there for a reason, because we're crossing the halfway point of the season now. Everyone's at either 19 or 20 games played. Who's been the Premier League's most pleasant surprise to you?
That is a great question. I think...
I'll give you a couple.
Okay, can I say, even though they're not like... they're probably going to go down, or there's a real good chance they'll go down.
Mm-hmm.
I've enjoyed Luton. They've been surprised. What a job Gary O'Neill is doing. I mean, that's the refrain after this weekend for sure, considering what they did to Everton.
I'll say this, and you mentioned Everton there.
Right, do you know what? Dwight McNeil. I'll say a man. Dwight McNeil, from what I've seen, has surprised me. When they signed him, I thought, oh, jeez, this is real bargain basement hunting from Everton. But he surprised me.
I know Everton got smashed. I mean, that was really bad over the weekend. It was 3-0. It could have been worse.
They're not going to be able to win every weekend. We can forget about that.
And I'll say this about them. If you told us before the season that this Everton side was going to be dealt a 10-point penalty for a breach of financial fair play rules, JJ, we would have said, oh my God, forget. I mean, championship, here we come. Forget it. Like, I know they're still in the relegation race.
They're like a point above or something.
But I genuinely believe, on form of how they've played, I really think they're going to be okay. And I think that for me, that has been one of the biggest surprises of the season. And look, call it excuse making, but James Tarkowski afterward, after their game against Wolves, he said, quote, of course, the run has been draining, but you'd expect most teams to be feeling the same. The two games before this, Spurs and City, are two of the most demanding physically. A lot of time out of possession, a lot of distance covered, and a lot of sprints. Maybe that took it out of the legs a bit. I mean, look, this time of year, everyone is tired. But I think what he says there is true. Tottenham and City are probably two particularly difficult teams to play against. And I think Everton expelled a ton of energy to just get themselves in this position where they could be relatively okay. Yeah. So they're going to have, I think they are going to have games like this. So they've been a surprise to me. And Bournemouth, even in their defeat to Spurs, that scoreline was not an entirely like accurate to how the game went scoreline. Tottenham went up a goal early, and then Bournemouth for the remainder of the first half were definitively the better team. And Tottenham were just desperate to get to the locker room with that lead still intact. And right. In so many other games this season, it's followed a pattern where Tottenham give that lead up and wind up losing. Now they hung on. Bournemouth, Solanke was just off it a little bit. Their finishing just wasn't quite good enough, but the chances were just one after another, and then Tottenham kind of rebounded as Bournemouth faded a little bit and added a couple more. By the way, we're talking about good passes. Lo Celso's assist was absolutely gorgeous. One of the assists of the season, I think, so far.
Amazing, like, how he was just cast off by so many people, including Spurs supporters. He's not fit. It was a waste of money, blah, blah, blah. Quality.
Yeah. And I think you saw, too, on the Tottenham side, like, again, you don't want to always use these things as excuses, but God, injuries matter. They just do. Everyone's got them. I know that that's true, but like seeing Bentancur back in the side, they're a different team. They're a different team when he plays. That first goal, that's him. I know the pass is a little bit ill-advised from Neto, Bournemouth's keeper, but like Bentancur is just perfect. He's so suited for that. Pounces on it immediately, makes the right pass, and then boom, Tottenham are in. Like this stuff matters. And again, I know teams have them, but the degree to which teams, who gets hurt, at what position, that stuff does make a difference. And seeing him back in the side way earlier than expected, it's huge. But back to Bournemouth, they would be one of mine. I mean, after that 6-1 loss to City, we kind of thought, okay, well, adios. But no, I mean, they've been great. Even in this defeat to Tottenham, they were impressive. They'd be one of my surprises as well. So there you go. I'll tell you what, let's go ahead. We'll take a break. We've got a little bit of a new game coming back from this from the break. So we'll do that. JJ, also, you had some story, I think, that you or something that you mentioned at the start of the show.
You care not. It's a clarification, but you don't.
Oh, yeah. JJ has to. So JJ will defend himself from something. when we come back.
No, I will clarify. I think my words were misconstrued.
Oh boy. Actually, I do care, actually. I'm curious where this is headed. More Caught Offside still to come.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. We're back, of course, from the holiday season. The festive period, I guess, is now officially over. We're past New Year's.
No, you're actually wrong. There's four more days of Christmas if you're following the Christian calendar. So, there you go.
Why would you do that, though? Who, me?
Just anyone.
No, I mean, people are like, it's January 2nd, all right? The country's gone back to work. No one's feeling festive anymore.
There's four more days in an Irish Christmas right now, let me tell you.
Well, tell that to your boss, all right? Looking back now on the festive period, JJ, I saw there was a funny meme going around on Christmas that I sent to you where a lot of people, I'm sure, saw this in different contexts, but it's two parents laughing hysterically at a kid who's just opened an awful present. And then you can superimpose in there whatever you want that awful present to be. And I saw it went viral that someone put in a Nicholas Jackson Chelsea jersey, which is mean, probably unfair, but also, I mean, look, it's a little bit funny. What would that jersey be for you that would have you just in like utter hysterics with your parents? I think right now it might be if you went down to the tree in your little Liverpool pajamas and opened up a Darwin Nunez present, I think you'd have that same reaction.
No, right? I wouldn't. Probably Balotelli.
Oh, really?
A Balotelli Liverpool jersey. Although now it's got kind of a kitsch camp value about it. like if you own an Angel Di Maria Man United jersey, then treasure that. Absolutely treasure
you
that.
You can't wear that.
Yeah, you can. Absolutely.
You can't wear that.
You should rock that. You should always be ironic.
He hated his time there, famously.
Yeah, but always be ironic. Yeah, yeah. It's like if I deliberately got a you know those companies in the Far East and let's put it this way, they remake a lot of jerseys.
Uh-huh.
And they shouldn't be, but they are. If I got a El Hadj Diouf Liverpool jersey, That would be a fairly ironic move.
Right. So. Hey guys, check out my Vincent Janssen Spurs jersey. Look at my cool Vlad Kirakesh kit. Yeah, who would that be for the U.S.? I think from our listeners, I think just based on like the sentiment of the general public, if our listeners as a thing opened up an Aaron Long USMNT jersey on Christmas Day, I think they'd get that reaction.
I honestly think if you're going for full value, it would have to be mixed discarude. The answer to all our problems for like 25 minutes.
Yeah.
You're going to the World Cup mix. Guess who isn't? Landon Donovan.
Yeah.
What? Are you serious? Oh yeah. My God. Yeah.
Is he the David Regis of his era?
Yeah. Remember we interviewed Mix Discarude?
Yeah, I liked him. Yeah, I liked him as a player too.
He was just he was just moving into his apartment in New York.
In New York,
mm-hmm. Yeah, funny.
I like that guy.
Yeah,
good for him.
Good for him. Well done on your move.
Yeah. You know, one other note on this, actually, the big gift. So we went for it this year and we think Jack's old enough. So we got a Nintendo Switch for him.
Whoa.
We went for it in a big way, which, by the way, I have been enjoying, but we only have one game.
You only have to check in with him when he's 18. Literally just let him have
we only have Mario Kart.
Oh, what? What do you mean you only have Mario Kart?
So that's
the
only
greatest game I know ever made.
Well, and the funny thing about it is, so it's my 7-year-old son playing against my 4-year-old son.
Oh, geez.
Jack and Luke are playing each other in Mario Kart.
Luke doesn't.
And
play.
Like, there's, well, he does. He's trying to, but that's the thing is, like, that game, like you just said, that game more than almost, I didn't even own a Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Nintendo. I never even had those. And yet I'm an expert in Mario Kart. Like, it's just an indelible part. If you're between the ages of like 30 to 45, Mario Kart is just a huge part of your childhood. And there's something that happens in your brain, JJ, when you're watching a 4-year-old play it against a 7-year-old, where you lose sense of reality and you go crazy because they don't know what they're doing. And I'm sitting there and it's like taking all my effort to be like, you got 3 red shells, use them. You've been sitting there with 3 red shells for the last 2.5 laps. Use the things. Like,
but the feeling,
you go crazy.
The absolute feeling of resentment and hatred when someone when you're flying and someone whacks you and takes you out with a shell.
Yeah.
You want to put the controller down and pummel them. It is so hard to take. Or I remember with the 64. By the way, the most underrated games console was the 64. It was amazing. You had oh, but you only needed 2 games.
GoldenEye
and Mario Kart.
Yeah.
You were done. But I remember I get so frustrated. I go off the side. I get shot. I'd end up off the side and I'd be battering into the sides for like what seemed like an eternity before I got on. And then I'd finish like 4th and I would just, oh my God, I would freak out. Oh my God. So much.
But watching a kid mishandle like valuable question marks, it just makes you, it's like, I can't watch. Like I have to leave the room. It just makes me so uncomfortable. I'm like yelling at them. All right, JJ, we've got a quick kind of new fun thing here.
Whoa.
Oh my God. You have to defend yourself.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
There's the start of Monty Python. I can't remember which one, but it's goldfish in a tank and they're going by each other and they're going, good morning. Morning. And they come back the other side and they say, morning, good morning. As if they haven't said it already because they have short memories. Uh-huh. That's you.
Yeah.
I made some comments. We were talking about the atmosphere at Anfield, Klopp's. I mean, again, yesterday, trying to pump the crowd up in that main stand behind him.
Yeah, I saw that. Rolled my eyes at it.
we were talking about generally crowd atmospheres across the Premier League and particularly at the bigger clubs, your Arsenals, your Man Uniteds, your Tottenham's. I said as an example that first of all, the principle I have is that you should populate, or clubs should endeavor to populate those stands with people from the local area, with people from Liverpool, from East London, from wherever, from Ipswich, from Norwich. That's where the atmosphere comes from. Those are the people that built the club. You can be in a place in New York City in a bar, and this club can mean more than anything to you, but you should not have priority in any way in getting a ticket to these games. Because, and I said, if you come from South Korea, Taiwan, Johannesburg, New York, anywhere, you're just not from that area. It's really the only place that I'm kind of like, I'm not an internationalist about things like this. If you can get a ticket, great. But there are far too many, clearly, people getting tickets, going to games and just watching. And some of them are even from England and Ireland. What I said, though, was, again, I mentioned Wisconsin. I said, like, Stacey and Brian from Wisconsin or something like that. And people think I'm taking shots at, like, the
Middle America.
I'm not. I'm really not. What I was doing was, Stacey and Brian is a name I can just throw out there as a tourist who go to a game who might affect the atmosphere. Whereas if I try to make up an African or an Asian name, there's a chance I create an incident and I would be being blasé and maybe xenophobic. So I didn't. I went for the easy target in terms of names. I love the Midwest. I love the center of this country. And their football fandom, their sports fandom in general is fantastic. I wasn't taking a pop at them. I wasn't being a coastal elite. I wasn't being a...
I understand people getting their back up a little bit because our audience is this. It's Americans who love the Premier League. That's who listens to this podcast.
I know, and I really believe that you can be in the supporters club in Georgia for Liverpool or any place in this country, and this can mean the world to you. It can mean everything, and you live or die with your team. Of course I believe that. I wouldn't be hosting that podcast otherwise. I totally believe that. But when it comes to tickets, and I include myself in this, something has to be done. And you shouldn't be just able to rock into the stadium coming from anywhere. The priority. The priority. Priority should be the people in the locality. They are the ones that create the atmosphere.
If I know, and I do know this because I follow him on Twitter, but there's a guy in London who, for whatever reason, adopted the Phillies. And he's an obsessive. He's opened a bar and like, or I don't know if he opened it, but there's this bar called Passyunk Ave, which is a famous street in Philly that it's a bar in London. And he's there. He watches every Phillies game. He's prominent on like, I know that there's people out there who have chosen at weird hours of the day to invest time and money and love and emotion. Like that guy, if he wants to come to Philadelphia and be a part of the a Phillies environment and experience, he should be able to. He's earned the right.
He, not arguing that. What I'm saying is we're getting to a tipping point. Look at Old Trafford. Look at the bottom four rows in Old Trafford. Like, it for maybe the last 15 years. Tourists. People with cameras. Like, I'm just saying, you can't have it both ways. And now that's not to say a Liverpool fan from, you know, the world can't go into Anfield and just sit there quietly and not be a loud supporter. I just think clubs are so indelibly linked to their communities. I'm not saying that someone from a foreign country can't go and watch them. Of course they can. Absolutely. But the priority must be given to those local people. And you talk to a lot of supporters groups right now, and that's not the case. They're either priced out or they can't get tickets at all. That's not right.
I just want to apologize on JJ's behalf to everyone from the state of Wisconsin, the fine state of Wisconsin, which I've been to, loved, cheese curds and all.
Reducing them. But
They were great. I love them.
I have a Green Bay Packers bar just down the street from me. The dram
what does that
shop.
Mean? So?
So, and I go and I.
You
I,
go.
And I'm beloved there. Anyway. Yeah.
I resent the idea that when I went to White Hart Lane for Tottenham Fulham, I in some way detracted from the atmosphere.
Not what
I
I'm
sang,
saying.
I cheered.
Not what I'm saying. Not what I'm saying necessarily. But I think if there was an Andrew from N17 that couldn't get a ticket because you were there, that's not right.
This is a tricky one.
It's a tough one. And I know I'm going to get even more backlash now.
Yeah, I don't know if this was an apology of sorts. I don't know if it came off that way.
Didn't go well.
I think it was a double down, quite frankly. Coastal Elite. There he is, everyone. All right, so JJ, new fun activity here. I don't know what I'll call it. Fun activity.
Listen, they'll decide whether it's fun or not.
Yeah. It's called Under Pressure. All right.
Oh, like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great one. So it's very simple. I'm just going to list two players or managers or teams, et cetera, and you have to tell me which one is under more pressure. That's easy. All it is.
Love it. Love
very
it.
Easy. All right. This first one is hard, I think.
I don't think it's hard.
Okay. Eric Ten Hag or Eddie Howe? Under the pressure.
I'm going to go with Ten Hag. Howe, we understand, is well-liked by Amanda Staveley and those who are day-to-day running Newcastle United. The main benefactors of the club, the government of Saudi Arabia, do not seem at this current moment massively bothered by how Newcastle are doing. Or we don't know. They don't seem to be anyway. And I think he's in a safer position. He can point to the massive injuries they've had. I know lots of clubs can, but he can point to that.
Yeah.
I think he's safer with those above him. What's changed for Erik ten Hag is the ownership of Manchester United. So the 25% ownership of Manchester United that it, the quarter they've decided that the Glazers are selling is the football operations department, which is just genius by them. We haven't discussed how mad that is. And Sir Jim Ratcliffe and he's come in with his group, and so they're not tied to Ten Hag. They haven't signed Ten Hag, and they're supposed to be seen as a brush that sweeps all the bad stuff away. These are the guys who are going to change the team around on the field, and they may have less patience for Ten Hag than the Saudis and I should say Amanda Staveley and the Rubin brothers have for Eddie Howe. That's how I see that one. Eric Ten Hag.
It's the correct answer. You're right. That actually is not all that difficult. I think Howe has some goodwill. He can ride the injury excuse, all that stuff. It's been bad. Losses to Luton, Forest, Everton, Bournemouth. Like, it's not good. But can we talk for a sec about Ten Hag? And for however bad you think the situation at Manchester United currently is, can we just discuss for a moment how close it is to being exponentially worse? So just like looking through some of their games this season, late winner against Villa, stoppage time winner versus Fulham, two stoppage time goals to come back and beat Brentford. United have won 10 games in the league this season, JJ. Nine of the 10 wins have been by a single goal. Their 3-0 win over Everton is their only win in the Premier League that was by more than one goal.
And they've hardly looked good in a single game.
Right. Wolves, like we've gone over, every game is tense. Every game feels like they need either like a stroke of luck to win it. They're not going to punish anyone or dominate anyone out of the game. They got a -5 goal differential. That's worse than 17th place Everton. It's worse than 16th place Brentford. I mean, I saw Mark Ogden writing about this. The David Moyes tenure at United is like, that's held up as the disaster. Like, that's the manager gone wrong for the club. That's the poster boy of it. This right now, Ten Hag is worse through these first 20 games than Moyes was during that disastrous season at Old Trafford. And like, the thing that worries me for Ten Hag, there's a clip from the Nottingham Forest match where you can see the Nottingham Forest players huddling up. And I think it's Morgan Gibbs-White that you can see saying to his teammates, look at their faces, they don't want to be here.
Wow.
And like, whether or not that's true, like whether or not that is how United players feel, no one knows. That may not be how they feel, but that's irrelevant. Just the mere fact that other clubs think that, it shows that like the intimidation factor of Manchester United gone. No one's afraid of them. That's Nottingham Forest saying that. Look at their faces. They don't want to be here. You know, like.
And so it proved. I mean, it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was. What did we say on the last pod? I said this is a trap game for them coming
you
off.
Sure, you did. And I joked that their Villa win will surely be the win that spurs them on to bigger and better things. I mean, this is a pattern now. It's all season. You can't trust any of these wins. It doesn't. Yeah. They don't spur on anything.
The Mirror reporting that Sir Jim Ratcliffe, they call him Big Jim, so a lot of podcasts are calling him Sir Big Jim Ratcliffe. He's
not clunky.
He's gone to Anfield? He's gone to Old Trafford for showdown talks with ETH.
That's good. That's what you want. Yeah. All right, JJ. So Ten Hag is the answer there. Next one. More pressure, Manchester City or Bayern Munich?
An easy one for me, Andrew. Bayern Munich are trailing in the Bundesliga to a former player in his first job at a tiny club compared to them called Bayer Leverkusen. They're expected to win every season. They sacked one of Germany's brightest footballing minds to get in one of Germany's previously thought of brightest footballing minds in Thomas Tuchel. Manchester City have just won a treble. They've just won a World Club Cup. City can have a down season, and they're still in the race for the Premier League. City could rip off 14 and still win the Premier League. Mm-hmm. The pressure is very much on Bayern Munich right now.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. Like you said, I think the treble, like there's enough leeway there. And like the other thing too, rightly or wrongly, I just think the competition that City are up against is viewed to be of a higher level than what Bayern are facing in the Bundesliga. And Bayern's problem last season was what? They didn't suitably replace the goals that they were missing when Lewandowski left. Well, they went out and got Kane, and he's been the best striker in Europe. So what now? Like, what's the excuse now? So
absolutely. And it is jarring and annoying for FC Hollywood to have somebody like Leverkusen playing this brilliant brand of football while they're toiling and losing games. And yeah, so pressure's definitely on Bear.
Okay. Next one. I actually think this one is really easy too, but I'll be curious what you say. More pressure, Gabriel Jesus or Rasmus Højlund? Under pressure.
The center forward at Manchester United, a new one, should always have pressure. There has been huge pressure on Rasmus Højlund, but Gabriel Jesus has way more pressure as he's carrying a forward line that's supposed to be trying to win a title after coming close enough to one last season. It's Gabriel Jesus. He has the reputation. He has the gravitas. Rasmus Højlund has not been good, but it's not really been his fault.
By the way, he's not been good, but he in the league, he was. Yeah, he did. Like, if we include goals. The Champions League, yeah. He has been,
and that's been, and that was a glorious Champions League group stage for United. Obviously, no, it's Gabriel Jesus, 100,000%.
Agreed. All right, two more. More pressure, JJ. Aston Villa or Girona? Under the pressure.
My answer to this is neither are under any real pressure. But I think that expectations have been raised at Aston Villa. Like Girona, there's City Football Group. You can add in all of that. They're not expected to come anywhere near winning a league. There's not the pressure. They are playing with house money. Everything they do till the end of the season right now is amazing. It's been great. Aston Villa, expectations have been raised. And Villa have a massive fan base. We don't see them as a huge club, but they are. They were European Cup winners in 1982. The relegation definitely took the kind of gloss off the club. But they're a serious, serious football club. And like I said, you know, there were a lot of really disappointed Villa fans over Christmas, particularly online, after being 2-0 up at Old Trafford and losing 3-2. There is pressure for Villa, if not to win the Premier League, but to maintain their there or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And that is a pressure.
Yeah, I'm with you.
This should be called under agreement. We haven't diverged at all.
No, I know. Because like the thing with Villa, and look, I don't see them as a team that's going to go on and win the title, but like there is an element of we better capitalize on this moment.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because like if they don't, if they fall out of top four or Champions League places, like are they going to be able to keep Douglas Luiz, even if they qualify for the Champions League? Luiz, you know, I haven't heard much about Ollie Watkins, but he's a young striker. Like a lot of teams are going to want a guy like that. Are they going to keep these? By the way, even the manager, like any high profile job that opens around the world, Unai Emery is going to be considered for, he's going to be a candidate for it. So I think that they're in a moment right now that they've got to capitalize on it because it could be tough to sustain.
There's a winning window. This season is one of those anomalies. And look, we know City, because of their financial firepower, are probably going to be there again unless there's some kind of Premier League charges against them that are actually acted upon. Mm. But we can expect that. We can expect Newcastle to get better. Just money does buy success and eventually. And so the winning window is open. Can they jump through the window?
One more. With an American touch to this one, JJ.
Oh.
This was by your request. Ricardo Pepi or Follerin Balogun? Under pressure.
For me, it's the pressure's on Balogun by a country mile. Absolute country mile. He was a surprise that he is a player for the US men's national team. It was a very welcome surprise. He was instantly installed by everyone, including us, as well. Now the center forward, it's his to lose. And yet, if you look at their records across the current league seasons right now, Pepe has, in the 23-24 season, 4 goals and an assist. He hasn't started a game yet. Those are all as introductions. He has not started a game in the Eredivisie for PSV.
Yeah.
Balogun, 14 matches, 4 goals, 3 assists. Now he's involved 35% of the time in when Monaco score goals, but Pepe is almost starting from a base where some people liked him. A lot of people were like, an MLS striker, let's see what he'd do in Europe. Didn't go well for him in Germany. The GM at PSV is an American. He's been brought in, scored a big goal in the Champions League for them. He is not a regular. He's not a guaranteed starter in a team that is absolutely flying. But for me, he's got less to prove. Balogun has been just universally promoted automatically to center forward, and now he's got to stay there. And I think Pepe is under less pressure.
Domestically, their goals per 90 this season. Balogun is 0.40. Ricardo Pepe's goals per 90, JJ, is 1.77.
Look, that's the point. And PSV, it's hard to get into that team, clearly.
Yeah.
But PSV sees something in him. And Balogun's got his big move. He had the success, the goals last season. He's got his move to a side of some stature in France, in Monaco. There's way more pressure on him to perform.
Can I just say, by the way, CONCACAF having a bit of a moment right now. So you had over the weekend for Fulham alone, you had Raul Jimenez and Bobby De Cordova Reed score. De Cordova Reed of Jamaica. Also, Leon Bailey scored over the weekend, also of Jamaica. Pulisic scored in his last game for AC Milan. What am I missing here?
You can make an argument, by the way. Sorry to cut across it, but you can make an argument that who's in line to take Canada's position as a team that can attack the US and Mexico as that other really good side in CONCACAF? Jamaica.
Definitely.
I really feel that.
Yeah, totally agree. You know, even too, I was reading, I feel like we need to check in with somebody from Italy, because we've kind of forgotten about him a little bit with like Musa and Pulisic over at AC Milan and what they've been doing. But some of the stuff I've been reading lately about Weston McKennie and the progress that he's been making at Juventus this season, he's gone from a player who had kind of fallen out of favor there that they didn't think they had much use for to beloved, to a guy who has just like completely found a new level and has been flying for them. Maybe we need to check in with somebody in Italy to hear how he's coming along there, because it sounds like it's been a pretty successful season for him.
We could go in the league.
Maybe that's a new thing to keep your eye out for. So there you go. There you go, everybody. Let's see. Before we get out on this pod today, there's a couple other items that are important, worth mentioning. Wayne Rooney out at Birmingham City. Didn't make it to the January transfer window. Yikes.
God.
I mean, look, when you inherit a team that is, they were sixth, I think.
Yeah.
And 13 weeks later, you're 20th. You can't be shocked by the sacking. From playoff race to relegation race, in that amount of time, it's usually going to get you fired. In Rooney's statement, he said, "I would like to thank Tom Wagner, Tom Brady, and Gary Cook for the opportunity." For the opportunity to manage Birmingham City FC and the support they all gave me during my short period with the club. Football is a results business, and I recognize they have not been at the level I wanted them to be. However, time is the most precious commodity a manager requires, and I do not believe 13 weeks was sufficient to oversee the changes that were needed. Personally, it will take me some time to get over this setback. I've been involved in professional football as either a player or manager since I was 16. Now I plan to take some time with my family as I prepare for the next opportunity in my journey as a manager. I don't know what happens to him now. Like, this is a few different jobs of nothing particularly positive to show for it. Little bits of positivity here and there until this one, which was all negative. I mean, like, this guy, like he said there, since he was 16, he's 38. That's 22 years in football under the spotlight for him. I mean, he was a superstar when he appeared at 16 years old for Everton. Like, he probably needs to take a breath here and take a minute, take the rest of this season, enjoy life a little. But it seems like this one really impacted him.
Sure, but and I do feel sorry for him, but I also really feel sorry for John Eustace.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he got this club to, what was it, a record points tally or their best points tally since 2016. And new ownership comes in. American ownership is getting absolutely hammered for this decision. Houston's had them in what, sixth or so?
They were sixth when Rooney took over.
Yeah. Why is he being sacked? Like, the appointment seemed weird at the time. Now, I know Rooney was really anxious to get back into management in England, but it's a tough club. There's big expectations there, and it just didn't seem like the right job. And Rooney's managed Derby and Birmingham now, and he's not even 40.
And DC United.
But I'm talking about massive clubs in England, like big clubs. It just feels like these managers don't do an apprenticeship anymore. So many of them.
Does DC United not count as that?
It would count if it was earlier in his career, if it was the first thing he did.
He was in his mid-30s when he did it.
He was unlucky at Derby with the points deductions. Generally, very positive view of him. I don't know.
It's interesting. This, like, Lampard, Gerrard, Rooney, trio of like really high profile players turned managers
hasn't worked out.
Has not gone well. Has not gone well. I don't know if that's coincidence or if there's something about being an elite player that doesn't always lend itself to being an elite coach.
If we were to throw in, let's do it just quickly. So of the 2006 era, no, we'll go back a bit further. 2004 era England, you know, that golden generation. Sol Campbell has been a manager, hasn't gone well. Paul Scholes, a manager, hasn't gone well. Gerrard, Premier League title with Rangers aside, it's going terribly. Apparently, he's doing really badly in Saudi Arabia right now. That's not why you go there. You go there to do well.
Yeah, did I read that he was asking for, they need more spending?
Stephen, we do have the resources. We can back you. Lampard, not well. And now Rooney.
You want to even throw in like Phil Neville?
Oh, yeah. But
on a couple levels? Like
so many levels.
Like, yeah.
First with the English women, and then kind of everything after that. He fails upward. He barely lost his job as Inter Miami coach, and the next thing he's on the sidelines with Canada as assistant manager, and now he's the Portland manager. How?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, look, this trend is it's not airtight. Like Zidane has succeeded as a manager; he's one of the most elite players of all time. So you do see some that do manage to do it, but I don't know. I've always felt that there's a thing about elite players that does not make it easy for them to be elite managers. I sometimes feel like there's things that just come so naturally to them that it's hard for them to impart that knowledge because it's so innate within them. Whereas some of these other guys that like weren't nearly of that quality.
I know I spoke about him on the live pod before, but like Kieran McKenna, you know, his career was cut short as a young man. And so I guess you have to necessity be the mother of invention. You have to be able to pivot and you take your coaching. I guess you take your coaching much more seriously if you have no safety net of the millions you've accrued.
Maybe.
And I'm not saying... Like,
I don't know. That might be unfair. I don't know.
That might be unfair because Rooney actually seems to have thought about the game fairly deeply. He did a column in the Times during the period after he was... maybe even Jordan while he was Derby manager. So seemed like he thought fairly deep about the game. But anyway, here we are.
Yeah. And then finally, JJ, as it is January 2nd, the January window is open. We're not going to do a full breakdown now, but like any names that you're particularly intrigued by?
Not really. I haven't thought about it.
Oh.
Not yet.
There you have it. I mean, look, I'll give you the
honestly,
obvious
ones. I'll tell you what happens to me. I see a rumor and I decide whether it fits or not. For me, I don't make them up.
I don't know that these will materialize in January because they're so big. Look, obviously, as long as Mbappe's contract is about to expire, everyone's going to be looking at him. This rumor of, you know, it's always been this foregone conclusion of Real Madrid, this growing rumor of Liverpool. Normally, I would disregard it, but because like it just like you've always said, that's just not generally the way that they do business. but I just can't get, I can't get over the fact of the Saudis are, there's a Brinks truck waiting outside of Anfield for Salah. And if Liverpool are serious about wanting to keep pace with City, then they have to be serious about replacing Salah with Mbappe. Whether or not Mbappe wants to do it, that's a whole nother thing. But Liverpool, I think, would be crazy, knowing the money that they're about to get. I think they'd be crazy to not really make a full push for this and try to make this work. And I think that there's an appeal to be made to Mbappe. Like, I know he's a lifelong Real Madrid fan, but like, I think you can appeal to him and say, like, you need to be playing in the best league in the world. If you want to be winning Ballon d'Ors and you want to take your global popularity to the next level, then this is where you do it. Like, Messi and Ronaldo being in the same league took their greatness and their popularity to extreme levels. And I think if he's not, you can say to him, if you're not in the same league as Erling Haaland and he's flying in a league that's more popular and perceived to be more difficult than La Liga, then he's always going to have an upper hand on you. You got to be here. This is where the action is. That's if I'm John Henry or whoever, I'm making that kind of appeal to him, challenging his ego kind of.
Maybe they will. I just think wages wise, it doesn't work. It doesn't fit.
And then there's also rumors, JJ, of the Todd father prepared to go all in to get Victor Osimhen from Napoli, who just signed a contract with them.
But so he needs to get rid of Conor Gallagher to make that
100%
happen.
At least start with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest, like
they're not going to
do it, but like Arsenal are the ones that should be banging down that.
How did Pochettino not make it into our under pressure category?
Yeah, I guess that's a fair one.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, now that you mention it, I am curious where Conor Gallagher goes. And
well, I don't know that Chelsea be able to, be, with all their financial, I don't know how they can be in on a guy who's going to cost over 100 million. But if they are, then get ready for the sell-off to begin now. So yeah, Conor Gallagher, my guess is he might be gone in this window, and it sounds like he might be gone to Tottenham, which is fascinating to see Chelsea give away one of their top two or three best players to a London rival. That's very interesting to me. But if that's laying a groundwork to make a play for Osimhen, then Gallagher will be the first of many. If you're any Chelsea Academy player of any significance, I would be on alert that your future may be elsewhere.
Osimhen, Nkunku, Nicholas.
Well, not
Jackson.
Nkunku.
Nicholas Jackson. The forward line we all wanted.
Oh, I thought you meant guys who should be worried. Yeah. Nkunku and Osimhen? I'm watching that.
You are that guy. You'll always be that guy.
I'm
throw as many
that.
Good players together and see what happens.
And by the way, percentage-wise, how often am I right?
You were very wrong about PSG. Very wrong. And you won't accept it.
Made it to a final. Champions League final.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't stay healthy. Who knows what could have been?
That's it.
Who knows what could have been?
All right. I need a cup of tea.
So go get one. All right. This has been a joy. I've enjoyed this immensely. Again, apologies to everyone in Wisconsin. JJ didn't mean it, although he kind of did based on his explanation. Like we said, get your messages in either on the Reddit thread or at CO Soccer Pod, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. There's plenty of ways.
We got to start amping the Discord as well. I got to check in with Johnny Discord and see where we're at.
Yeah, but a big Thursday 2024 mailbag pod. We're going to go through all your questions and comments for the upcoming year in soccer. Next week, the store will be officially raring to go. So get your T-shirts and be on the lookout.
I am the store. Dare you.
And I'm going to put the in the show notes when you go to click on the podcast, you'll see a link to the sports podcast group's best football podcast award. So you can
and the store, put the store in there too. What are you doing?
You got to send me a link. I don't.
You're pathetic.
I enjoyed this. I always do. We'll be back later this week with a special 2024 mailbag pod. JJ to you. I say
I look forward to your growth this year.
I'll see you.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.